Chapter 62. We dressed fast and were out on the street 2 minutes later. Devereaux stopped and took two flashlights from her trunk. She lit one up and gave one to me. We used the alley between the hardware store and the pharmacy, past Janice Chapman's sad pile of sand, between the loan office and Brannan's bar, and out to the beaten earth beyond. She walked on ahead of me, almost limping, which didn't surprise me. I was on my knees. But she kept on going, dogged, committed, reluctant but determined to serve. She was going to the railroad track, of course. She scrambled up the packed stones and stepped over the bright steel onto the ties. She turned south. I followed her. I figured the engineer would be about 20 minutes behind us. I figured his train would weigh about 8,000 tons, and I knew a little about trains that weigh 8,000 tons. Sometimes MPs are traffic cops, like any other cops, but our traffic is specialized in that it includes tank trains, which usually weigh about 8,000 tons, and part of directing traffic at that level is understanding it takes a tank train about a mile to stop, even in a panic, and it takes an average man 20 minutes to walk a mile, so we would get there 20 minutes before the engineer did, which was not a privilege, although I doubted there would be much left to find. We pressed on, almost jogging, trying to match awkward strides to the intervals between the ties. Our flashlight beams bounced and swung through a fading cloud of smoke left behind by the train's tortured brakes. I figured we were headed right where I had already walked twice that day, where the path through the field to the east crossed the track before heading into the woods to the west. Devereaux's own childhood street, in effect, more or less. She must have been thinking about the same place, because as we approached the spot, she slowed right down and started playing her flashlight beam carefully left and right. I did the same thing, and it fell to me to find it. All that was left. Except, I supposed, a red, pulverized mist that must have filled the air and touched everything within 100 yards. A molecule here, a molecule there. It was a human foot, amputated just above the ankle. The cut was clean and straight, not ripped or torn or ragged. It was a neat, straight line. That line had been hit by some unbelievable, instantaneous shockwave, some kind of savage, subsonic pulse, like an acoustic weapon. I had seen such a thing before, and so had Devereaux. Most traffic cops have. The shoe was still in place, a polished black item, plain and modest, with a low heel and a strap and a button. The stocking was still in place under it. Its top edge looked like it had been trimmed with scissors. Under its beige opacity was dark ebony skin, ending neatly in what looked like a plaster-cast cross-section displayed in a medical school lecture hall. Bone, veins, flesh.
"Those were her church shoes," Devereaux said. "She was a nice woman at heart."
"I am so sorry this happened."
"I never met her," I said. "She was out." That was the first thing the kid ever said to me. "My mom's out," he said. We sat on a tie about 5 yards north of the foot and waited for the engineer. He joined us 15 minutes later. There wasn't much he could tell us, just the lonely glare of the headlight and the briefest subliminal flash of a white lining inside a black coat falling open. And then it was all over long ago.
"Her church suit," Devereaux said. "Black gabardine, white lining."
Then the engineer had slammed on the brakes as he was required to by railroad policy and federal regulations and state laws, all of which were a totally pointless waste of time in his opinion. Stress on the train, stress on the track, and for what? A mile's walk? And nothing when he got there. It had happened to him before. He and Devereaux exchanged various reference numbers and names and addresses, again as per regulations, and Devereaux asked him if he was okay or wanted help in any way, but he brushed the concerns aside and set off walking north again, a mile back to his cab, not at all shaken up, just weary with routine. We walked back to Main Street, past the hotel to the sheriff's department. No one was on duty at night, so Devereaux let us in with a key and turned on the lights. She called Pellegrino and told him to come back in on overtime, and she called the doctor and told him he had more duties to perform. Neither one was happy, but both were quick. They arrived almost together within a matter of minutes. Maybe they had heard the train, too. Devereaux sent them off together to collect the remains. We waited, not saying much, and they were back within half an hour. The doctor left again for his office, and Devereaux told Pellegrino to drive me to Memphis, much earlier than I had planned, but I would have wanted it no other way.